You're listening to the Metaphysical Mentor Podcast with Michael Philpott, providing you inspiration, information, knowledge, and motivation to help you on your soul's path. Covering topics related to health and happiness from the mystical to the metaphysical and everything in between. Making the unknown known. Now let's join the podcast to discover today's topic. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. This is the Metaphysical Mentor Podcast. And of course, I'm your host, Michael Philpott. And joining me back on the show again, the fan favorite, Mr. John Van Auken. And yes, John, you are my fan favorite. So many people loved the episode we did about ancient Egypt. We talked about Edgar Cayce and 2038. So it's been my most popular, but I wanted to have you back on because you are the kind of the expert in this field. So I wanted to talk about Atlantis and how amazing that is. So how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm good. And I guess Egypt was Edgar Cayce's top topic, but second to it had to be Atlantis. So we have much we could cover. According to him, all of us watching together here tonight had to have had an incarnation in Atlantis. It lasted for over 200,000 years. Very likely our souls visited at least once in 200,000 years.
Yeah, it's so amazing. I mean, I really appreciate you sending me your book because it was really an in-depth approach to Atlantis from the Edgar Cayce's perspective. But as I did more research, I realized that everybody uses Edgar Cayce in their research about Atlantis. So you start reading other authors and things like that. You find that it's like they're just quoting Edgar Cayce. Everything that he talked about and everything that you talked about in your book is exactly what they're talking about. And there's just so much to unravel. And I figured if we can just start off just something just as really kind of basic is the location. Because I know there's a lot. There's just so much information out there. And a lot of people have been talking about recently that there's these new ideas that it's the Riyadh structure in the Sahara, or it's a city somewhere in the Greek islands. So maybe we can get some clarification of where's the location of it? And was it a continent or was it a city?
Okay. Now I'm going to give you Edgar Cayce's channeled information from the universal consciousness and the Akashic record. That's what you're going to hear from me.
Perfect.
He said it was a massive continent from the Caribbean Ocean all the way across the Atlantic to the Straits of Gibraltar, which Plato seems to support. The Pillars of Hercules is the way Plato wrote about it, which are the Gibraltar. And it reached north toward Ireland and England, Scotland, Wales. And apparently some part of it reached towards the northeastern United States. And then it came south down into an area that would allow travel easily to the Yucatan Peninsula and to Africa. So it was a massive continent. However, due to some of the loss of attunement and the mistuning of their great crystals. Now, remember, we're talking over a 200,000-year period.
Yeah.
The continent broke into five islands.
Okay.
Nature, tectonic plates broke apart because of the vibrations being off. According to Cayce, the Atlanteans were using their crystals to channel radiation from the sun and the stars. And they were using that energy to support their lifestyle and their transportation ability. And Edgar describes clearly they could, their machines, their vessels could travel underwater, around the earth through the atmosphere and beyond into the solar system. Now, we find support for this in the Ramayana of India, ancient India, in which they actually describe planets in the system and travel to those. And it's an ancient document, very similar to our Iliad and Odyssey. It's, in other words, it's a poetic story of great detail. And so very similar to the Iliad and the Odyssey. Now, those five islands then broke up into only three left.
Okay.
And finally, there was only one, Poseidia, and that's where the city was.
Okay. So that's what Plato was describing, was that particular city.
It was concentric circles like you hear others talk about.
Now, so that's probably where the confusion gets. They don't realize it was a bigger piece. And basically what was left was eventually after they destroyed it was that small city.
Yes, that's true. Now, Edgar points to the Sargasso Sea, which you remember Columbus and his three ships, when they were sailing across the Atlantic, they came upon the Sargasso Sea full of all of this vegetation. They thought they were close to land. And Columbus kept dropping that measuring rope off the side, and he could never hit the bottom. So he decided, wait a minute, I don't know what all this vegetation is, but we got to keep going. The Sargasso Sea is a region in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. And that, according to Casey, beneath that, in deep water, are significant portions of ancient Atlantis. And then he said the temple you could find from Atlantis is off the coast of the small island called Bimini, which is part of the Bahamas. And we've researched Bimini thoroughly for years, archaeologically, and we have found significant stuff, but most of it's covered in coral, and you're not allowed to damage coral. So you have to wait for Mother Nature to send a hurricane over and tear the coral off. And in some cases, it did do that. And we published all of this up on the internet. But anyway, that's kind of the story.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. And one of the things I was really interested in, I know recently there was a famous author that did a TV special on one of the streaming services. And they were talking about this and talking a little bit about it, but they never really mentioned Casey. And I was listening to and I was like, wait a minute. That's what the Edgar Casey was talking about Bimini and the structures there. And, you know, most people would say that it's basically man-made. It wasn't man-made. It was from the natural currents and this is what it is, but it's too perfect. And then everything that Casey was talking about in the readings, it just really makes sense. So one of the things I was very curious about, and I was trying to go through a timeline and really help people understand about the readings, is about, you said 200,000 years ago, it was at 210,000 BC. Was that the first Atlantean civilization, like the first physical incarnate in bodies?
Yeah, at that time? But it's different than the way we live today. Let me explain that.
Please do.
Edgar already told us about Lemuria and Mu being a massive push into matter of the children of God, the spirits of the children of God into matter. But they didn't actually incarnate like we do, but they were here in the third dimension and they could influence it, and they were also influenced by it. And that's where we get our legends of these creatures that are half mermaid, half fish, half woman, half horse, half man. All those mythological creatures was where they were pushing their minds and spirits into physical forms that were already here. There were no human bodies. And however, there were the higher apes eventually, but not during the period of the dinosaurs. That they could be here during that period, but they weren't pushing into those. later, as the ice ages started, they got involved. And so that would be the period of the saber-toothed tigers and the woolly mammoths and all that jazz. They were getting involved too deeply and somewhat possessed. So a group of souls, there are several soul groups, decided, hey, we need a new start, and we need to accept that we're going to have to go into matter for a period of time. And Atlantis was the decision.
Okay.
210,000 years ago. And that started the journey. Now, if you look in Genesis, up until you get to chapter 2 in Genesis and about verse 26, 28, somewhere in there, we're one gender united. We're homogenous, hermaphroditic. When God cast a sleep over Adam, now at this time, Adam is a lowercase a, which means in Hebrew, a being, and they translate it in Numbers and other chapters of the Bible, a person, a being, not man. For some reason, the translators in Genesis translate little a Adam as a man, which leaves us the illusion of a male, which wasn't the case. So God casts sleep over little a Adam and pulls out the feminine. Kava is the first Hebrew word used, which means the life giver. And in Hebrew, Sha is male and Isha is female. So you see, they're both Sha, but one has the womb. So you could say male with womb, or wombed male and male. And this is what Edgar and ancient cultures teach about. Well, Edgar Casey says that first happened in Atlantis when they realized that this was a dimension of duality, even though duality is an illusion. This was a dimension of duality, and yin and yang, though united in one soul, is now expressed separately.
Okay.
And that was the beginning in Atlantis, and that started this the feminine body and the masculine body.
Yes, so, I was wondering if there was, as far as I was looking at the reading, it was like this was when Lilith and Amelius came into that. So can you talk about that? Because are they considered the first Adam and Eve, as in the biblical terms?
Yeah, in Casey's long story of the ancient times, long before the Garden of Eden, which was much more physical, there was a mental, spiritual immersion into this world of an Adamic body, but not as dense, he says, as our body. And the Hopi tell us that that body, you could come and go. It didn't possess you. You didn't have to wait for death to leave. You could manifest it or retreat with it. It was a part of your projection. And so for about the first 106,000 years of Atlantis, this initial Adam and Eve expression was going on. And there was a central figure. And the feminine in that central figure was the ancient name Lilith. And all the Hebrews have it in their ancient story. Lilith was the first female. And then Amelius was the first Adam type, yang male expression. Now, these two were very tied because we're not as dense in Atlantis. Our bodies are not that fixed. And as the Hopi told you, you could express it or retreat with it, you know. So you have to think of it as a very different reality than we know today. But yes, he says Eden first occurred in Atlantis, and the first Adam and Eve were Amelius and Lilith. Then that failed due to a lot of things that we could discuss. And the islands started breaking up, and the first creation, which is called the Age of Lemurian Atlantis, was over. And you go to Genesis chapter 6 and you see where God says, hey, we're going to start over. I don't like where this headed. And in chapter 6 of Genesis, you actually have the cleansing and the second creation occurs. And that's when you start with all of the stuff that we know pretty much historically. But the other stuff is prehistoric legend and lore.
Okay, so that was, I was always fascinated by that and the correlation, because I know you talked about that, about Genesis and that. And because I, you know, for a lot of people who are Christian, we, you know, you kind of, you read about that, you were taught about that, and you kind of, yeah. But then when you have that actual information about how Casey described that and the process of that. So at that time, so we were separating that particular time, like 106,000 BC, we were separating. That was the time we started separating into like the physical bodies that we have here, like the men and women at that time.
Just not so dense. Our bodies were much subtler and they didn't possess our souls and our minds so completely as they do today.
So we could still, if we wanted to, say, you know what, I don't like this place. I want to go back home and hang out in the stars somewhere.
In fact, he gives readings that are about souls who actually did that. One of my favorites, he said, and then she became disturbed with the way things were going here, and she withdrew to the deeper meditations in Mercury, the dimensions of Mercury, not on the planet. And that's the way I'd like to go, you know, Mike. I'd like to say I'm going to withdraw to the deeper meditations in Jupiter or Venus or whatever. Apparently, souls could do that.
I'm sure if anybody probably could do it after all the years you've been practicing meditation and all the crazy stuff that you have. I'm sure one day you'll be in Egypt, you'll be in the temple somewhere, and all of a sudden you said, you know, pop, I'm gone. You know,
Be a future incarnation because I've been in the temple and in the king's chamber nearly 50 times and I've had high experiences, but nothing transcending physicality like what he was describing.
Not yet. I mean, there's always a possibility. There's always a possibility.
It'll be a future incarnation.
Oh my gosh. So, okay. So from there, I always get kind of confused at the timeline because there were some facts in there that kind of jump that I wasn't quite sure. Cause it kind of goes from 100,000 BC and that's when we had the separation. And then it kind of jumps to like the first kind of destruction of Atlantis where the five nations come together. Now, prior to that, they talk about the five nations, but then there's the five Adams and Eves where we separated into the different categories, the different races. Now, when was that? Was that after we became Emilian and Lilith separated and we came a little into this more physical body? Were saying about 60,000 BC. Was that correct?
You see, for me, I don't want to fix it because I would say in the first, now we started 210,000 BC. I would say during that first 100,000 years, somewhere in there, Edgar Casey said the soul group met. Now, by the way, the Mayans keep this in their legend. They said the souls had a powwow. They came together in the seven caves, and they discussed their challenge of being in matter. And they decided, listen, we're going to break into five races. They didn't use the word races, five groups, but it turned out to be what we know today as the five races in five locations on the planet, not in Atlantis. Atlantis would be one of the five. And Edgar gives the five locations where they did this. And each will take on one of the five senses and master it. And then we'll all come back together and benefit from the division of labor and what we all learned individually by applying it. Now, individual souls are not locked into one of the five. They can jump around through incarnations, but their initial one of the five fixes them as a certain Eve and a child of that Eve. So okay. Like the Japanese have big stories about the five Eves. And Edgar says that that happened during the early periods of Atlantis. And the locations, do you want me to give you the
location?
Sure,
absolutely. Yeah, let's as much detail as you can throw at me. Perfect.
Okay. So the red race was Atlantean. The yellow race was Asian in the Gobi Desert, which Edgar says was not a desert back then. It was a glorious place. And that we in the future are going to discover the golden temple under that desert. And we're going to be shocked because nothing of modern skill could have built the golden temple. Wow. It's kind of like the way people look at the Great Pyramid and scratch their heads going, how could they build this? And let's see, the Andes Mountains was the brown race. Of course, the black race was Africa. Now, we're not sure, but it could be and pre-ancestors of the Nubians, because we find a Stonehenge down in Nubia and the Nubian regions in Africa that predates the Stonehenge in England. So a lot of people feel like that. Now, the white race, of course, comes from Caucasians, which is the Caucasus Mountains, the Caucasus Mountains and the Carpathian Mountains. He uses both of them, which is north Western India, sort of. And so that's the way Edgar Cayce outlined it. Now, he did say that the Atlanteans, red race, okay, migrated from Atlantis and became the Iroquois Indians, but he specifically said the Royal Iroquois.
Okay.
Because later the Iroquois inbred with other nations, but initially the Royal Iroquois. And where this gets interesting is he said, in the ancient times before the Great Flood, feminine was dominant and it was natural for the females to rule. When you go to the Royal Iroquois, females are, it's a matriarchal, females all run the place. I would go live in my mother-in-law's house. See, she was in charge. Well, when I visited the Hopi mesas, I was sitting there with a what I thought was the chief and a bunch of male bosses. And I said, so who's the chief? And they all kind of got quiet and dropped their heads a little bit and said, she is. I said, well, I want to go meet with her. Yeah. And then she explained to me that all the property is owned by the women. And we got into a discussion and I said, well, how do you guys divorce if you get married? She said, oh, it's easy. We just put his clothes outside the hut or the house and he knows it's over.
Jeez, wow.
I said, oh my goodness. So feminine in ancient times, Cayce says, was the dominant force, and the Royal Iroquois reveal that they are connected to this sort of Atlantean period. Now, they also came over the Bering Strait. The Algonquins have the whole story of coming over the Bering Strait, again, Asian, and somehow Atlantean mix there. Now, see, here's where it gets confused. Edgar says in ancient times, we were flying all over the place. We were not limited.
Yeah. So that's what I was always find so fascinating, because there's this big migration, and how back then did we get from point A to point B? I mean, today we take a plane, we get there, or we take a boat, whatever. But back then, like, how would somebody from the middle of the Atlantic Ocean go to China?
Yeah, yeah. This is interesting because the ancient Ramayana that I referenced earlier includes stories about us flying around. And they describe the vehicles that were used. Vimanas is what they call them. Vimanas. I'm sure you've probably heard that term.
Yes.
And the Vimanas of India are carved and pictured, depicted, and stories are written about them, very descriptive. And So Edgar says that the crystals allowed these individual vessels to tap into that radiation energy, stellar energy, and travel with stellar energy. And they were not limited by water or air or space. They could move through all of them. And he even talks about how the high priest Rata visited Asia and learned what they were doing in their temples, visited the pre-Mayan lands that were eventually the Maya, and visited with them. And they all were sharing knowledge. Wow. Fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, like once you go down this rabbit hole, there's just so there's so much to involve. Like, and this is what gave me more questions, because then there's the idea about the ancient alien theory that, you know, we came in spaceships and stuff like that. Then I was through reading the research material, it seems like those aliens or gods were probably just Atlanteans using the vehicles to move from one place and to another. And then the indigenous population saw those people coming in these hot air balloons or whatever, the Zeppelin type machines, or just, you know, flying in chariots, whatever you want to call it, are now there. And then they saw that, because it always reminded me of like the Nazca lines, because they were always saying, well, they were made to show the gods. But if the gods were just Atlanteans using their technology, then it kind of throws that whole, I mean, I like the idea of spaceship. It's kind of cool. But then it's like, well, maybe it was just us.
Yeah, during my incarnation this time, I had the good fortune of becoming a friend of Zachariah Sitchin.
Really?
He and I talked a lot.
I love his stuff.
He loved Edgar Cayce.
Oh, my gosh.
He and I talked a lot about this. And his Anunnaki story, which was very fascinating, fit well with Cayce's stuff, only using a different spin. And I used to say to Zachariah, I said, Zachariah, the ancient aliens were us, but at a higher level of understanding, wisdom, and influence over matter. Now, you got to understand, Edgar had three waves of souls coming into the earth. The first wave was a lower level of curiosity and desire, not necessarily the highest ideals. The second wave had a heartfelt feeling for those who had gotten lost in their awareness of the infinity of their nature by becoming too materialistic.
Okay.
So a third wave, Jesus called them the elect. And remember, he said, if the time wasn't shortened, even the elect would fall away. That's how difficult this place is for a spirit to be without getting possessed by the world. And so this elect were powerful, maintained spiritual awareness. They could build the Great Pyramid with forces that Edgar called the powers of levitation, and perfectly carved stones without chisels and hammers. And apparently we're going to see the Golden Temple in the Gobi eventually, and they could build that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but they also guided the lower level entities. Now in Genesis, it's called the sons of God and the sons of man and the daughters of man. And even the elect, the sons of God, got enchanted when they saw the projection of the yin in the form of a female. It was a part within them that when they saw it outside of themselves, they projected more outside, because everyone wants to be one with their soul self, with the yin. But the yin was actually within us. That's when Carl Jung comes along and says, wait, John, if you want full enlightenment, you've got to get in touch with your
feminine side,
feminine within you.
Okay.
Because the whole consciousness is both yin and yang. And man, that just, now we've been doing this since the 1970s. We my wife was pushing me to get in touch with my feminine all the time. My best buddy, his wife was doing the same. But the women had to get in touch with their masculine too. So it was a hard period. But for greater awareness, you couldn't leave these separate. You had to unite them. Now, that didn't mean that my wife Doris became more male. No, she was very feminine, and I retained masculinity. But we now had the understanding and the energetics of the complementary opposite within us. So it made us better people, and together we became a better couple.
Wow. It's so fascinating. I just love understanding because it really just expands on who we are, you know, it just much more because you look at the anthropology and it's like, okay, we came from apes and that was it. And there's this evolution stuff, but there's so much a deeper spirituality and understanding to us in our history. Like, and that's why I was always fascinated by reading the Casey material. There's just so much that brings to light. And it's just, I want to be the time where all the stuff that Casey says, everything, like finding that the beautiful temple in, you know, in the Gobi Desert, and be like, told ya, you know, we've been told ya, you know, this is like everything that you thought was crazy is not crazy. And, you know, there's a lot of truth to that. So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was the story of this de-evolution of our consciousness and how we became these two fractions that kind of started this destruction of Atlantis. They talked about the sons of Baal. Is that how you pronounce it?
Belial or Belial.
Belial. And then
there's two waves. And the only way we ever heard that name, except for Casey, was the Dead Sea Scrolls. That was the first time. Yeah. The dark angel in the Dead Sea Scrolls, the lord of the dark angels, the leader was Belial or Belial. B-E-L-I-A-L. Okay. And that's when we really got it. Now, it's in the scriptures too, but it was the identification in the Dead Sea Scrolls of this entity as being the leader of the dark angels. Now, we were like angels during this Lemurian, Atlantean early period, but around 50,000 B.C., the darkness took over and started to affect everything. And that lady I just mentioned who withdrew to the deeper meditations in Mercury, that's what drove her away. She saw the sons of Belial or Belial gaining power and influence, and it disturbed her so much she withdrew from Atlantis.
Okay. So that's the period where the first breakup is from my understanding. They had the crystal and all this amazing power. And they decide, you know what, we're going to use it to, from what I understand, they wanted to get rid of all the animals, these big animals that were causing a lot of grief. So they decided that let's wype out some of these animals. And in tune, they started doing that. But then the second time Atlantis broke up was at 28,000 BC, that's the number.
Yeah, you're right.
It was a mistake. It was somebody that was playing around with the crystal and tuned it too high.
Yeah, that's true. Imagine his karma when he reincarnates and gets that reading from Edgar Casey. His reading number is 440. That's who it is. Oh, and can you imagine him sitting there while Edgar Casey said, and inadvertently, not intentionally, you mistuned the crystal and destroyed the land.
That's amazing. So at that particular time, from my understanding, that was the high period, that 28,000 BC after the second destruction. Now,
Edgar says the highest period, and I'm not able to really develop on this much, was in Lemuria.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah. He actually says Lemuria was the highest point because we were still spirits and minds observing the third dimension and physicality, but not, most of us not pushing ourselves into it. That was the highest point. However, when you started to want to possess something physical, and you pushed into matter out of energy, Einstein helps us with that E equals mc squared. M is matter and E is energy. And they're both the same, one expressed in a certain form and the other expressed in energetics, energy, vibes. And so we were still mostly vibration and consciousness. But the more you pushed yourself and condensed your energy into material expression, three-dimensional form, the more contained you became and limited in your awareness.
Okay.
And that was the descending involution into matter, Edgar said, out of the evolution we're on now. We're actually evolving back into spirit now, but we came out of spirit and had this involution pushing our way into matter and lost a lot of our celestial awareness, became terrestrial, which was not our natural nature. And then we had to go through a process of reawakening. And Edgar says it starts when a soul says, this can't be all there is to life. as soon as the soul says that, bang, it opens up to expanded awareness of, yes, you're right. There's a lot more to you and life.
That's so amazing. So that was particularly the downfall of our species. And then from there, it got worse. And then there was, from my understanding, but there was a lot more wars, a lot more control that was happening. And this is when this is when a lot of the mass migration started happening to the various places like Egypt, the Yucatan, things like that. People, they kind of said, let's get out of Dodge. This place is getting way too crazy. Is that when most of the temples started happening and building, like these temples of healing and things like that at that particular time?
It goes over kind of a long period here, but yeah, you're sort of right. It's not so rigid. It's hard to fix it. And no one got Casey to really zone in on that, the timing of the temples, because you see, he even explains the original Great Pyramid was a dynamic sacred zone, a portal into the infinite. And a little monument would be built there. And then the next generation would build more on it. And eventually they build a true temple or a pyramid on top. Pyramids are all around the earth, even in China. And so you got to understand that once a portal was discovered, even by the Maya, Toltecs, Aztecs, and pre-Olmecs and all that, once they had a portal or a spiritual event occurred at a location, that became a sacred site. And the first thing was a little stone pile, or then a altar, and then a temple around the altar, you know, and then a bigger and bigger each generation. So they span over a period of time. One thing I want to share with you that Zachariah and I chatted about. Edgar Casey said that the sons of God, Edgar said, were male and female. In fact, he's giving a reading for a female who is asking about her spirituality. And he says to her, oh, you're one of the sons of God who helped begin the path back to enlightenment. And he uses the word son, even though she's feminine, a female, incarnate female. But she possesses both in her qualities. So anyway, the sons of God used, according to Edgar, animal husbandry on the apes, the great apes, to form the first physical bodies for human souls to use, for children of God's souls to use. So when Zachariah writes about stuff like that, he's real close to Casey. Casey would agree that there were higher alien energies of a celestial heavenly nature that had the power to influence material breeding, and they chose the higher apes as the first possibility for creating a human form. But Edgar said they could not get it to bridge over to a pure human form. And it took a long time, and then a miracle had to happen. That's the way he describes it. And then finally, they actually had the form and the seven spiritual centers, though he says back then you had 12, but and we're going to have 12 again. Anyway, I don't want to get lost in all the detail. And then souls were in temples where they had to maintain purity and inbreed over and over. So that's where you got the temple virgin, the sacred males, and birth temples. Like when you go to Egypt, you'll notice outside the main temple is a birthing temple. They had to isolate to keep the genes pure and keep reproducing Homo sapien energies forms, genetic Homo sapiens versus the higher ape influence in the genetic forms that we call pre-human.
Okay, wow. That's just kind of blows my mind, because that part I never heard about. I mean, I kind of heard about it through Zachariah stuff a little bit, and it's been a while since I delved into his work, but I always find it fascinating because, you know, there is like that correlation between, you know, what Casey was talking about and what he was talking about the Anunnaki and this idea about, you know, indoctrinating, you know, developing this kind of this type of workforce and things like that. So one of the things I wanted to touch on is the final destruction of Atlantis. Now, from my understanding from the research is that they knew through their still like their spiritual connection, they knew that there was going to be an event that was going to happen. So that's when, you know, there was that kind of final migration outside of Atlantis to the various areas. Did they know specifically that it was going to be this kind of event story? Because I know a lot of people talk about the Younger Dryas event, where it was more of a comets or asteroids. Was it comets or asteroids that was the final destruction?
No, that predates Atlantis completely and has more to do with the dinosaurs and stuff like that.
Okay.
There is one asteroid that came over the Carolinas and created the Carolina depths off of the Dominican and the Caribbean. And that had a destructive effect on Atlantis, but not the big one that took out the dinosaurs. According to Casey, now remember, the females are the high priestesses and the channels of wisdom.
Okay.
There are males with them, but these priestesses, and they were channeling the warning that this was over. The first creation, God was going to, or the God forces, the infinite universal forces of life, were going to cleanse and start over. And they started to put that out. And then Edgar describes, and he actually gives readings for pilots of the vessels who were transporting souls away from Atlantis, some going to North America and the Royal Iroquois, some going up into Wales and Ireland and Scotland and the islands up there, some going to the Yucatan Peninsula, some going down even into South America. And of course, he mentions clearly the Pyrenees Mountains and the Basque people, who have a root language connected to no language on the earth today. Their ancestors were, and we're talking a long time ago, their ancestors were remnants of Atlantis migrating away. And then Edgar says from that group, they migrated into Egypt.
Okay.
And that's how Atlanteans, the rumors of Atlanteans being involved in Egypt came about.
Okay. So one of the things I was always curious, because you spent so much time in Egypt and you really have a in-depth knowledge of Egypt's history, stuff like that. Was there anything, any information on the hieroglyphs that said that the Atlanteans were there, they kind of like a record within the walls and stuff like that. Because I know one of the resting places, from what I understand, the one of the Hall of Records about the history of Atlantis is in Egypt. But there's anything on like on the walls in the hieroglyph somewhere that you may have seen and going, okay, maybe that's what they're talking about.
Not the word, not okay. The name.
Okay.
But there are images in some of the tombs in the valleys of the kings that are alien looking, have antennae on their heads and various other features that look unhuman, non-human, beyond humanity's normal forms, or even the higher apes. And yet there are also lots of images on celestial beings. But you won't find, or I never found, the word or the name Atlantis. Where I got that was from Plato saying he met an Egyptian high priest who told him the okay. stories out of Egypt about Atlantis and the Atlanteans. And that at that time, the Atlanteans were somewhat troublesome. They had become, from 50 BC on, arrogant, selfish, self-focused, violent. They turned the healing crystal into a ray gun to kill the Ice Age animals. And you'll notice that archaeologists find woolly mammoths still chewing the food in their mouth when they're killed instantly. Wow. They have food in their mouth. That's how fast their death occurred. And they're frozen that way. And when they look and say, this creature was chewing when it was deceased, immediately, that's how fast. They didn't have time to gulp. They were dead. These things are there, but I never saw anything on the walls Atlantean oriented, except alien imagery, which you've seen it on the internet. Those guys go nuts over it, the ufologists, UFO people, and celestial beings. Heavenly celestial beings are everywhere. And when you read the Egyptian Book of the Dead, you see a lot of blending, especially in chapter 15 with the Great Pyramid. And celestial stories about okay. us having levels of bodies, and one of them is way beyond this world.
Okay. So with the final destruction and then the story of the transportation of the records, and there's, from my understanding, Casey said there was in three locations, one in Egypt, the one in Bimini, which is under the slime, I guess he called it the slime, the sludge of the ages. Yeah. And the other
and
one
our
is
problem
in the...
there. Our problem there is coral.
Okay.
They're covered. We try very hard and we find places and go, wow, there is definitely a human structure, but it's covered in coral.
Yeah. I'm
and
sure
the other
is the Yucatan. It was the Yucatan, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
He actually talks about an Atlantean high priest who took the records and traveled to the Yucatan Peninsula. And he first landed right on the peninsula. And then when Atlantis had its final destruction, it destroyed his temple and all. So he had to move deeper inland into Guatemala Mountains and buried the records there.
Okay. Wow. Now, you guys have done research. The ARE has done research down in the Yucatan. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Lots of it.
Lots of it, yeah. Has anybody ever came close to figuring out where it is exactly, the Hall of Records? Or approximately whereabouts, maybe?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So maybe the answer is maybe.
Maybe, okay.
In Yucatan, we have used Casey's description of the records being under an overhanging. Now, Yucatan has mountains and forest and hills and temples built up on the hill, but you can come down below the hill, and he says in the overhanging area, they are inside there. And we have found caves, so have the archaeologists, and so have the Mormons. The Mormons have been there. We've met them there. They believe in underground hidden records. Remember, their founding leader read records that were buried underground. So they have this same concept that Edgar seems to express. So we know some of these beneath the massive temples and the overhang, there are caves. We haven't been able to go deep in them, and now so much is going on dangerously in Yucatan, we have not been able to go back. I mean, we have both drug lords, and now we have a government that's struggling to maintain. So there's a lot of challenge. So then we jump to Bimini. The problem is coral. But we put up on the internet all the stuff we found that was truly remarkable, and we hired the most well-known and frequently booked underwater research team called Global Underwater Explorers. And they came up after shooting, and we have all the videos up online. They came back and said, you have definitely got a place that is nowhere else in the world. Wow. What we're seeing down there is not natural. And then we found out that the Bimini Road, which is beach rock, which does occur naturally, is beach rock with wedge stones between layers. Nature doesn't put wedge stones to level out the beach rock.
No, it doesn't.
Human. No. So this really was a docking area. And then we found the Andros Road, which was also a docking area. Then you jump to Egypt, and in the front paw of the Sphinx, Edgar said, beneath is the Hall of Records. Now, the thing is, all of our research, as you know, there is on the Dream Stela a carving that shows a temple beneath the Sphinx, right on the carving of the Dream Stela. And Dr. Zahi Awas and Dr. Mark Lehner both drilled down there to drain water that was building up under the Sphinx. And they were paying attention to the possibility of hitting something. But the angle of their drill was not like the Dream Stela. On the Dream Stela, the angle requires this, but they were going a little more like this. And their mission was to get water out from under the Sphinx that could damage things. So our calculation in front of the right front paw of the Sphinx is that the chamber is in the Sphinx temple.
Okay.
Now that's the old temple. Right next to that temple is the Valley Temple, which everybody goes in. It's not the Valley Temple. We're talking right in front of the Sphinx Temple, which is ruins. It's ruins. That it must be right inside there off the right front paw. But there's no way anybody's going to give us permission to dig up.
I was going to ask you about that. There must be a lot of blowback about that. They're probably going, yeah, no, I don't want you guys risking, you know, demolishing the Sphinx just to find some little chamber that may or may not have some records of a past civilization.
That's true. But here's the thing that's happening in Egypt now. Every time the scientists discover a new chamber in the Great Pyramid, all the authorities go, oh my God, imagine how much is hidden that we haven't found yet. And so this attitude is starting to open up from protect everything and keep tourism dollars flowing to, well, it attracts more tourism if we find good stuff.
I'm sure there's kickbacks. I mean, you got to buy permits and dig permits.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of shady deals. I mean, a lot of probably people are going to make a lot of money, you know, if they start digging more and start discovering more.
I have to tell you, honestly, all the years I've been in Egypt since way back in my young years, I have not found shadiness when it comes to the authorities. I know people talk about this and little statues have been stolen and sold in Europe and all. Yeah. And Europeans are giving them all back, Bob. I know all that. But I'm telling you that if you're talking about tipping the salesmen or tour guides, yeah, that goes on. Tipping is normal to Egypt. They have a phrase, bakshish, which in Arabic literally means share the wealth. But when I've actually seen Dr. Hawass and Dr. Mark Lerner and other people involved in powerful archaeological control, I have not seen corruption, shady deals. I'm telling you, if you legitimately had an archaeological degree from a university that had strong history in archaeology, you would get a permit using the normal channels.
Wow. Okay.
And that I honestly have to share that with you. That's the way I've seen it. And I've been there, I don't know how many times.
You lost count. It's probably got to be what? At least once a year, was it? At least?
Oh, there were a few years I went four times a year.
Oh, my gosh.
I spent more time there than here.
That's probably why your marriage lasted so long after a while. It's like, you're yes. never around. You're never around.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. So
my wife wasn't one of those who cried when I left. She said, bye-bye. Have a good time.
I have married friends like that. She always says, you know, go with your friend, Mike, leave me alone. Yeah. Go with him. Yeah. Leave me alone. I'm fine being by myself. Leave me alone. So yeah. Do you think we'll ever find the records in our lifetime?
Boy, I don't know in our lifetime. I don't think so. Right now we're in the battle between the Armageddon of the dark forces and the light forces in that area, and wars everywhere. Potential explosion of the war into a greater war. Egypt's deeply involved. I don't think this is where the energy of the world is going right now to discovery. I think it's going to a point of light over dark, authoritarianism over governance by the people and freedom. This is a pitch battle going on right now.
Yeah, because I, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about this, and this is, I'm glad you kind of brought this up, because this is what I kind of feel. It's almost like we're, from my just reading about the Atlanteans and who we are, it's like we're repeating the same cycles.
Yeah.
And this forces of light and darkness, this idea there's one group versus the other group, and there's people who are in control and the people who don't have control. And I'm just seeing this, and I've just thought, you know, we're just going to end up just like the Atlanteans. We're just going to end up blowing shit up, and, you know, and that's it. Like, and it kind of bothers me. And I thought maybe somehow we'd evolve into probably a better consciousness, but it just.
Well, Casey says Atlantis is coming back. The Atlantean period is coming back because life is done in cycles, but he says the cycles are spiral. In other words, you keep rising to a higher level of challenge. And a higher level of understanding and wisdom, challenging egocentric desire and gratification and domination. So these are rising. And he does say Atlanteans are reincarnating now. And the world is cycling toward this repeat of the ancient times when we lost our way and we destroyed everything. And now we've been on this evolution up to this point, and we're being tested fully to see if the light will actually overcome the dark, if the people will choose selflessness and care and love of others rather than selfishness and self-control and self-domination. And you see the struggle in Israel right now. Some of the Israeli people are very disturbed as to what's going on in killing so many Palestinians, and yet the power people in Israel and some of the citizenry think, oh, hell with that, let's kill them all, you know?
Yeah.
Within yourself, you're actually struggling all the time between this understanding of the importance of oneness among the community of souls versus separateness, them and us, and that leads to real brutality and ugliness. We've seen it throughout the centuries.
Yeah, it just keeps getting ramped up. Like we think we're out of it just for a bit, and then something pops off, or you know. And I struggle sometimes because I'm usually a pretty positive guy, and yeah. I try to do my best, you know, and try to live by higher standards and stuff like that. But yeah, so I just sometimes I can't watch the news. I just thought, man, there's got to be something more we can do to raise the vibration. If Casey was alive today, what advice would he give people, you know, that are kind of struggling right now and they're seeing this chaos? What would his kind of wisdom be? Maybe throw a little bit of your own spin on it too there, John.
Okay. Well, Michael, you understand he was alive during World War II, and he was getting bags of mail from the mothers of soldiers overseas. So he was deeply involved in a world war. The whole world was at war. And he related it to the last chapter in the book of Daniel in the Bible, and saying that this is the period of transition toward a new age in which all the darkness, all the dark intentions, all the dark motivations have got to come out and free your heart of this hatred by expressing it. And then all the light souls have to come in and counterbalance that energy to get us through it. But God doesn't want any soul loss. So even evil souls are having an opportunity to scratch their heads and go, wait a minute, this can't be right. I can't be doing this. And if they start, that very thought starts to shift their use of the gift of free will that they have been given. And so this is a struggle battle between what Christians would call the Antichrist energy and the Christ energy of collective love for one another.
Yeah.
And I know the prophecy says ultimately the light will be victorious. But a lot of souls may not make it. And Jesus said, there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth when the veil drops and everybody sees the truth. And it's over. And they'll be separated. And there'll be 1,000 years of peace on the earth. And do you know, in the Casey readings, he said, put it in your heart to be here then. You've been here during the rough times. Don't miss the good times.
All right. I think I'm going to sign up for that one. And I think all my listeners are going to sign up for that too as well. And John, you know what? We're out of time, my brother.
All right. It's been wonderful. I enjoy talking with you.
I so appreciate it. And I know my listeners appreciate you too, John. And good. Just got a thing, just anything happening at the ARE, you got a couple of minutes here. You can talk about the ARE, what's happening there, talk about donations, you know, memberships. What's going on at down there in Virginia Beach at the ARE these days?
Well, I'm going to be doing a Canadian Zoom program February. Let me see. I think it's February 23 to 25. So you Canadians up there, check it out. And North Americans, check it out. You can all join. And we're going to cover a lot of different things during that Zoom retreat. The ARE Center here is doing a lot more Zoom because travel and the residual effects of COVID, which killed us back in 2020,
it did a lot of damage for everybody.
Yeah. So physical travel has subdued a great deal. So we're doing a lot more Zooms and online, on-demand videos with YouTube. I mean, I've been doing a lot of YouTube stuff.
I've been seeing that. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, that's where ARE is right now. And we've got a great audiovisual center, high technology, and well-managed. So that's where we're at right now. The magazine, the membership magazine, has just come out in a new form, and I'm editor of that, and we put together a lot of good content in there. And of course, it's online, so you can go and download a PDF of the magazine and view it at your leisure. There are 18 to 20 one-page articles on key topics that you'll enjoy. And then there are about 3 4-page in-depth articles I know you will enjoy. So you might want to check that out. So things are okay. I mean, we're keeping on despite the world condition and the residue of COVID.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, I always say everybody, you know, everybody knows who listens to this channel. I'm always been a big fan. It's of the ARE and Edgar Cayce's work, and of course, you, my friend. I've read several of your books there, and I've always enjoyed our conversation, stuff like that. So, if you guys are listening, you want to get some more information about the ARE, it's, you know, you go online there. You can check out the website. They got some great information, especially if you're into health readings and all the beautiful health readings Edgar Cayce did and all the different treatments. If you have an ailment, you can go online. There's such a vast majority of information you can get on the website too, as well. And of course, you want to throw an extra couple of dollars their way. It always helps out to donate and support the guys, just like myself. If you want to support my channel, you can do the same thing, you know. I need to get some gas money once in a while because, you know,
amen. Yeah.
You know, in Canada, everything is 3 times more expensive than any other place in the world these days. But it's absolutely crazy.
Now, the website in the U.S. is edgarcayce.org. Now, doesn't Canada have a unique website, or am I wrong about that?
I don't think so. If you go on ARE.org, it goes right to your site. So
it goes right to, okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
There's no issues yet. The government hasn't censored everything yet on our end. We can still get the American content too as well, but yeah, go to ARE.org. Okay. Check it out. Again, John, thank you so much for spending some time with me. I know you're a busy man, and I always appreciate it. Yes, thank you, my friend.
I enjoyed it. Thank you for inviting me.
So I'm just going to close out the podcast here. This has been the Metaphysical Mentor Podcast with Michael Philpott. Thank you so much for tuning in, and goodbye for now.